Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Planetary Powers. I'm Hercules Invictus, and today on a special edition of Mages, Sages, and Seers, I'm proud to bring you Mara Wiley, who is a remarkable woman, and she's about to tell us about Ishtarfest 2021, which is a remarkable festival. Greetings, Mara. How are you?
Hi, Hercules. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Also, I hope you weren't very affected by the hurricanes.
I live a truly blessed life. We were completely unaffected, except for, you know, being with the people who, you know, being in the community of the world and other people suffering.
Well, I'm glad you weren't touched by it. We were affected by it. We had like knee-deep water in our basement. And during the storm, we went out on our porch, and our house and all the houses around us looked like they were in the middle of the lake, and there was water for us as far as you could see. I couldn't see the street, couldn't see the sidewalk, couldn't see the lawns, nothing. It was just like water as far as the eye could see. So it was like Atlantis legend for a little while.
Oh, okay. Well, that's appropriate for the upcoming Ishtar Fest. I believe somebody's going to be talking about Atlantis and how it relates to Sumerian myth and Inanna.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm super excited about this festival. It's starting to take shape, and we have all kinds of experts in Sumerian culture and religion coming to talk. But you wanted to say something else, so go for it.
No, I was going to ask you to go into maybe the history of Ishtarfest a little bit. I've watched it grow, and it's grown quite a bit since the first one. And also, you started to share what my second question would have been, which was what type of events and talks are you anticipating this time around?
Okay, sure. So thank you for those questions. I am going to share a little bit about what, so you probably think you were at the first Ishtarfest, but the first Ishtarfest happened in 2003.
Oh, wow.
We called it the Shapatu of Ishtar that year. It was supposed to be a weekend long, and it ended up being a one-day festival in a state park, and was right after my son was born, so I was walking around with him in a sling. We did a full version of the play, The Shapatu of Ishtar, which I wrote, and it was based on the descent of Inanna, and then we had ritual men's, women's, and gender neutral, I guess, or gender fluid rituals, and somebody did some kind of foot bathing ritual, and it was kind of a very interesting day. And we had one protester who kept circling in the park.
What were they protesting?
Pagans, I guess.
Okay.
It was, you know, like there was a 75 of us and one person. We kind of felt bad for them, actually. That was the first time that we had this festival, and then we took a very long break, and in 2016 we had we revised or, you know, rejuvenated the idea. Gaia, who owns the land that we meet on, you know, I just want to do this again. I'm so excited about it. We're going to do the play and have a weekend long. I've always wanted to do that with my land and have a weekend long play. And so we did all of that kinds of things again. It was a very big undertaking for us as a group because it involved a lot of rehearsals and took us many months. And because so many of the people in Hands of Change, my group that sponsors this, were in the play, we were trying to staff a festival and run this play, which is five acts, and it's designed to be done over the entire weekend in segments. And we had a big feast. One of our members at the time was a caterer, so she made all this Middle Eastern food. So that was great. And it was like $75 a person for the whole weekend, including the food. And that's kind of how we started out. And then the next year, we decided that we needed to not be quite so optimistic about how many places one individual can be at a time. So we scaled back and just did a few vignettes that another member wrote. And then after that, we started groups involved in doing some of the programming, so the Hands of Change members could be more like the staff of the festival and less involved in all of the programming. So that's kind of how that happened.
I thought I was at the first one, but no, I would remember all that. I'd remember the protester too.
back in 2003.
Yeah, I'm glad that that the idea to bring it forth again and repeat the play was followed, because the Ishtar Fest that I've attended were incredibly awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, we've done something a little bit different each year, and I'm really excited about this one because as we've been doing it, we've been connecting with people who practice Sumerian Reconstructionism religion, and so there are a number of temples all over the world, really, that are dedicated just to Sumerian deities, which going into this whole idea, we didn't know. I can't even tell you exactly how we picked Sumerian mythology as our festival topic back in 2003, but I know it was something that not very many people were doing. We're eclectic. We don't have one pantheon that we connect with, but my co-priestess in crime, Maeve, I think she might have kind of a Sumerian soul, and she kind of was the driving force originally behind the choice of mythology, and that nobody else was really doing that in our known pagan community. But so now we're starting with these other folk who are really dedicated to the worship and care of Sumerian gods and goddesses. So what's been happening is that they're starting to come and provide a lot of the content. And since we've been online a lot last year and we'll be mostly online this year, they really can participate. So we have people who are going to be presenting who live in England, in France, in the Midwest, in California. Last year we had an attendee from Israel, you know, so we're really excited that we're able to do this in kind of a global way. And it was such an amazing coming together of all these folk, both in terms of standing, you know, the worship from people who are doing it, you know, all the time, not just dabbling like we are, and people, and that we as a community can come together, because we had a number of events last year as part of our virtual sacred space where people could just come and discuss things and perform together. We had a couple of online cafe, music cafes, so people could basically have like a bardic circle in their living room, which worked out great.
Oh, that is awesome. I'm planning on presenting at the event, and I was thinking of continuing my studies in the planets. And they started way back when in the ancient Near East. I don't know if specifically Sumeria, but certainly by Babylon. And also, I've been studying the roots of Hercules in the ancient Near East as well, in his African roots. So I've been toying with that idea. So once I solidify my ideas, I'm going to fill out your paper in the next couple of days.
Right. We are still looking for more presenters, so that's fantastic. And I always love your workshops. You gave two last year, and they were fantastic. I really enjoyed them. You talked about the ancient astronauts theory, and it was a very fun. You're very animated in your speaking, so I love that.
Thank you very much.
And I guess it's the idea of the planetary powers is also really great. I guess that's what your show is about, because all of the major Sumerian deities are associated with the planet, which I'm sure you know, but maybe not all of your listeners know. So Inanna is the planet Venus, the morning and evening star, and her brother Shamash or Utu is the sun. So, it really is a very solar system-based religious experience that definitely had, was the progenitor or the parent of the Greek pantheon. Like, you can make absolute connections between what people were doing in Babylon and what people did eventually in Greece. Inanna is Venus. She's a goddess of both love and war, and that mm-hmm. changed a little, but definitely there is a connection between her and Aphrodite, for sure.
Oh, there definitely is. And in the ancient Near East, again, with Hercules, Herodotus tied him very closely with the milk cart, the king of Tyre in the biblical accounts. And he points out that Melkart existed many generations before the Theban Hercules, of who the 12 laborers are ascribed to. And that becomes a fascinating study, especially if you look at the actual texts from late antiquity and not the modern interpretations people have of what people believed or what they were doing. But if you read the source material, you get a totally different picture of the occultists of many of the Olympians.
Yeah, definitely. So also, since you, the other question you asked was that what some of the other things that we're going to be having as content at the festival. So one of our previous speakers who comes to a lot of our festivals is James Jacob Curie or Offset Gypsy, which so he is an Isian worshiper, a worshiper of Isis, and who is also connected to Venus and Inanna and Aphrodite. And he is going to be talking about the astrology of the planet Venus, which is a very interesting topic. And I don't know if anybody has watched online the trajectory of Venus, but the planet it's an 8-year period, makes a star shape on its transit. Yeah. So there's we talk about the star of Venus, and if you'll see pictures of this kind of 8-pointed star thing, it's because that's what the planet does. And it's amazing to me our ancestors could tell that without, you know, modern telescopes and all the stuff that we, the technology we have. And then some other things we're going to, so Samuel David is a Sumerian author of several books, and he is going to, he has a new book out called Rod and Ring, and he's going to be doing a ritual based on that book. And Rod and Ring are tools that are sacred to Inanna. So that's in case anyone doesn't know that. So that's kind of, I don't exactly know what the ritual will be, but I'm sure it'll be fantastic. Ed Vanderjot, also an author about of Sumeria, is going to be speaking. I don't know yet what, but I know he's committed to coming. We'll be having some. So Inanna is also the goddess of sacred prostitution, and there will be, and some of her priests were gender fluid. That was like part of the priesthood. So we will be having a discussion about queer and transgender topics that are related to Inanna. There is a woman whose ground is Middle Eastern, and she is going to be talking about how to worship deities or in a not in a hostile environment, because she's a her name is May, so she's going to be talking about that. We'll definitely be having, so we've expanded the physical gates that we had at our festival, and made them larger and more beautiful. They're replicas of the lion gates, so our opening and closing ritual will be hybrid. It'll be filmed and then live streamed from the Covenstead, from the piece of land, and it will involve opening and closing the big lion gates.
Is this the same lion gate that opens in August?
Oh, the lion's gate. That's an excellent question. No, these are actually physical gates that were constructed out of plywood. But the Lionsgate portal, so I am a big fan of the Lionsgate portal, so that was a good topic. That was actually what we did our main ritual at our pagan picnic this year about. The Lionsgate portal is on August 8th, and that's also, if you turn 8-8 sideways, it's the infinity sign. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the star Sirius lining up with the sun and the earth in Leo. And this year, there were two other, the moon was in Leo and Mercury was in Leo at the same time. So there's like extra portal energy. And the idea is that there's this big, expansive, extra abundant energy that is available to plan or to use in whatever way a magician wants to use it. And what we did at our ritual at the pagan picnic was we went back in time 18 months to before the great pause started, before COVID, and assessed where we were and did some processing of the emotions that we've had. And then we went 18 months into the future to March of 2023, and there's a whole lot of astrological stuff happening between now and then, kind of like a great awakening feeling, and imagined and magically created the way we would like the world to be 18 months from now. So that was a really fun, interesting ritual. That the Lionsgate portal. Totally an aside. It got me on a tangent.
But still, it has resonances. And I've spent a big part of this year following internal and external information on the Lionsgate, the portal. So I got excited when you mentioned Lionsgate because they're a major preoccupation of mine that I haven't really talked about so far that much.
Well, excellent. I I'll talk with you about that anytime. I love the Lionsgate portal. I try to do a ritual for it every year. I mean, in some ways, it's sort of a thought experiment, right? I mean, 8-8 is Roman, whatever. It's, you know, it's a more modern number, but this back in ancient times, when Sirius lined up with the sun and the earth was when the Nile flooded. So whether you were going to have a good year or a bad year depended on what happened during those few weeks, because if the Nile flooded too much, you would lose your home, and if it didn't flood enough, you might have a drought and a famine.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So the symbolism of your event hopefully will bring good fortune to all who attend and all they know and love beyond those who attend.
Yes, that would be that is our hope as well. Oh, and this year we are adopting a couple of charities that we're going to give part of our proceeds to, because last year we offered the festival online as a gift to the community, because we knew people had hardship and things were very up in the air. But this year we're charging $25 for the online festival, and part of our proceeds is going to Doctors Without Borders and an Iraqi relief agency. So we wanted to give back to that region of the world.
And that is one of the awesome things about you and what you do. You know, you have always been community-minded and have always publicly helped people and organizations that help people. So when you finish talking about this year's Ishtar Fest, I'd really like for you to go over that again, because that is really amazing. And like me, you believe that folks who follow the old ways, the mythic spirituality, should be out there and living in the world and not closeted.
Right, absolutely. And it's with one of our principles in Hands of Change, that the idea of giving service as part of a religious experience, it's kind of a chop wood, carry water kind of a thing, but the part of the way we can worship our gods is to be their hands and voice in the world. So we do at least one litter pickup every year. When we are meeting in person for our solar holidays, we generally do some kind of community service project that everyone can participate in, whether it's collecting, you know, food for a food bank or coats, or doing some hands-on thing, some kind of volunteer work as a group. We really feel that that's part of how we worship. And my background is Jewish. I was raised sort of secularly Jewish, and one of the ways that Jews talk about it is tikkun olam, repairing the world. So one way that you can repair the world is physically putting your, you know, sweat equity into repairing the world.
I believe that as well. I'm Greek, and we have basically this idea that started in antiquity that strangers could be gods. So you never know who you're talking to, and you have a responsibility to help the world be a better place, because the people that you're encountering, they may be gods in disguise. And that's why the Greeks are known for their hospitality and so forth. And back when I was in New York City, I guess like 20-something years ago, I did something called the Age of Heroes, where we recruited people from all different spiritualities. So we had people from mythic spiritualities of all sorts. We had people with cosmic UFO spiritualities. We had people from traditionally dark spiritualities, like a totemic shaman who were into werewolfry and vampires and Satanists, all working together to help a library type of a place in Brooklyn form to address the digital divide that was affecting people who were in the lower income brackets of our society. And people were very happy to dedicate service in the name of deities and normally you couldn't dedicate service to. So we opened up the door. We also had more traditional people. We had Catholics. We had Jewish mystics. We had all sorts of people working together despite which heavens they felt attuned with or were born into. And just like the Argonauts of old, you know, you did something that was grand and heroic. Bill Gates eventually solved that problem by giving giving computers to libraries. But when we did it, it was a radical thing to do, and lots of people got involved.
That's so awesome. I love that idea of dedicating specific things to deities. I know when we do the litter pickup, we do a little prayer to Mother Earth, but, like, you know, how cool would that be to, like, you know, do something specific for the deity that you worship? And I love the idea of the you know, helping a library and literacy and all that. So if people are interested in Ishtar Fest, we have a number of places you can go to find out more about it. I'm just throwing this out there. Our website is www.handsofchange.org/Ishtarfest, which is ISHTARFEST. And we also have a Hands of Change page and an Ishtar Fest page on Facebook, as well as a Hands of Change private group. So we will be posting previews of the different speakers over the next few weeks. We're I think exactly a month away. It's October 8th through 10th.
Yeah.
And we'll be it'll start Friday, October 8th at 6 p.m. is our opening ritual. And then we will be having the closing ritual at 2 p.m. on Sunday, October 10th. And there's a lot of actually astrological stuff happening that weekend, so it's going to be kind of a cool time to be. There's a lot of planets in retrograde, but there's also a lot of interesting, powerful stuff going on. So we'll see how that goes. Mercury was in retrograde when we did it last year, and we had a couple of technology hiccups, but mostly it went pretty well because we're being watched over by the gods, so that's
yes.
It.
That's always a good thing. I'm going to take a short music break, and we'll play Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley, and then we'll be back.
What path do I feel you tread? to her, the unearthly choir, lady of moonlight, lady of day.
Greetings and welcome back to Hercules and the Planetary Powers. That song was by Virginia Ackley. It's called The Golden Bough, and we're very honored to have Virginia's music gracing our station. And now we're back with Amara Wiley, and we're going to learn more about her and her incredibly unique spiritual journey. Greetings and welcome back, Amara.
Thank you, Hercules. I'm delighted to be here. I appreciate you having me.
And I appreciate your being here. And I was looking through some of our earliest shows this week, and you were there. You were in one of our first episodes, and you were one of the few who came to Mythic Atlantis when we tried to launch that in 2016.
Oh, right.
So the years passed so fast. I can't believe it's been over 5 years since that happened.
I know. It does really go fast.
Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
You had mentioned that your background is Jewish. What led you on a mythic spiritual path to go past Judaism, and what were your explorations like until you found what you were looking for?
So, great question. I was raised in a secular Jewish home, so we considered ourselves Jewish, but we didn't really do very much religious. We didn't go to temple. My parents were both atheists. My dad had been a Baptist minister, but he had a crisis of faith before he met my mother. And I, from a young age, believed in God, wrote poetry to God, had this very I consider myself to really be a panentheist, which means that I see God in everything. And I wrote, one of the poems I wrote had a refrain. I was really little. God is all around us. God is everywhere. And so I had this sort of very mystical beingness, even as a young child. And I would, very, very young, when I was, 4 or 5, I had pretend friends named Gig and Gog, who I have more recently realized are actual creatures in Sumerian mythology. So, I've kind of been mystical from a young age. I got interested in practicing Wicca I don't know, maybe college or just after. And my mother passed away in 1991, and I was young. I was 23, and I felt like I'd lost a piece of myself. And a friend of mine took me to a shamanic healer. I wasn't really religious at that point. I kind of was, you know, not practicing any religion, though I had taken a lot of religion classes in college that I love. And the shamanic practitioner did a soul retrieval for me and saw all this stuff and found a power animal for me. And it was all like, I can't believe anyone would know that kind of thing. It was just an amazing experience. And I was like, I want to know how to do that. I want to know more about that. So I found a school in New Jersey that doesn't exist anymore, called the Center for Mind-Body Studies in Metuchen. I think that's what it was called. And I took a 6-month course on in shamanism, and it also did massage therapy. So at the end of the 6 months, I was certified as a massage therapist. That wasn't really my intention. I just ended up that way. So I started practicing shamanism. I didn't call myself a shaman. I called myself a shamanic healer. And I also decided I wanted to learn more about being a priestess. I had read some books on Wicca, and I found a different school called the Triple Goddess Ancient Women's Mystery School. There was a flyer up in a Barnes & Noble. It was a 9-month program, and I was like, okay, that's for me. So I don't know, about a dozen women signed up for this program, and after it met once a month, after about 3 months, there were like the teacher and me and one other woman named Blaze was still part of the school. Everyone else had lost interest or not wanted, I don't know, whatever happened. And so Blaze and I became friends, and we became friends with the teacher, Connie Jasper. And Connie brought I had invited Connie to a sit-down dinner birthday party at my house, and she brought a friend of hers, Maeve, and Maeve was completely horrified. She didn't know it was my birthday. She didn't know it was a dinner party. They had gone out to eat. It was like all this, and I just was like, oh, great, new people, because I'm an Aquarius, so I like everybody. So I met them, and then Blaze started dating a woman named C, and the summer of 1997, the five of us sat down and said, okay, we're going to create a coven, and we spent the entire summer hashing out what the coven would look like, and what it would be called and what we wanted to do. And Connie decided to opt out, though we're still friends with her, and she often teaches and participates in our stuff. And so Blaze, C, Maeve, and I formed Hands of Change, and we were extremely excited and young. Next year, I will have been in Hands of Change half my life. But back then, I was 27, and we had all this energy, so we were teaching classes and doing rituals for solar holidays and lunar holidays. And we had this very, very optimistic ritual and class schedule. We were teaching every month. We were, you know, we did 21 rituals a year. It was just like, you know, all this stuff. And then we in Maiden of 1997, we created Hands of Change as an official thing, and we started taking members in, and we were meeting on the land of one of the people who became one of our first members, and for solar holidays, and then we were meeting in the George Street Co-op in New Brunswick, New Jersey, for our lunar holidays, and we used to joke we had this ritual amoeba because there was like a coffin freezer and couch, and the room was shaped weird, and so we kind of had to, like, our circle was shaped into like a paramecium and not a circle. People were sitting on the coffin freezer, the big, like, reach-in freezer. So that was our early days, and then we started outgrowing the co-op, and we moved our public full moon circles to the Unitarian Society in East Brunswick, and we've been meeting there ever since, except for during the great pause during COVID, because they're closed and we're not meeting in person in public. But since the great pause started, since April of 2020, well, actually that's not true, since February of 2020, some of us started doing rituals online. I had this thought in the fall of 2019, gee, I wonder what it would look like to do a ritual in virtual sacred space. So couple of my pals who actually aren't, they're more like allies of Hands of Change, they're not members, and I started we did in bulk 2020 online, and then COVID happened in March, and we're like, wow, good thing that we started learning how to do that on Zoom. So since then, I started doing Friday night prayer gatherings every week and all of the solar holidays in virtual sacred space. So I think I have done something like, 70 rituals since then, which is insane.
you're still ambitious and full of lots of energy, so that hasn't gone away. Even half a lifetime later, it's still there.
And part of that is because also at the beginning of the Great Pause, I had a 20-year business as a professional organizer, helping people clear out clutter from their homes and offices. And at the beginning of the Great Pause, I kind of went, I don't think anyone's going to want me in their home for quite some time. So I took a bunch of money out of my retirement fund because I figured I was going to need to live off of it. And then lo and behold, the government had a bunch of money for people who were in business. And I think I'm retired. I realized that I was on the salary of God, and that as being on the salary of God, that my job was to wake up in the morning and go, what service am I? What, Goddess, what would you have me do today? And that's kind of how I've been living my life for the last year and a half. And that has been incredibly lucrative. And not just because the government was handing out money, but like all of a sudden, money was coming from everywhere. And an example of that is I was on the phone with somebody. I just started taking, calls from people who wanted coaching, I guess, virtual coaching. And one of the women that I was, who found me, was talking to me. She's like, I really don't have any money, but I really want to pay you. And I said, oh, I think you did pay me. She said, what? I said, yeah, I got a check this morning for $361 from my health insurance from a rebate from 2 years ago. So I think that was, the goddess paying me for talking to you. I had a very long money poverty story, and that I seem to have stepped outside of that now.
Good.
And I'm really
good.
Happy about that. Yeah.
I tend to view things the same way. It's like I'm on Olympus's payroll, And even though that doesn't prevent challenges or things that I prefer not to have happened to occasionally happen, I would say that considering everything, I'm phenomenally blessed all the time. So I take that as my payment and the gods taking care of me.
Excellent. Yes, it's so, you know, fulfilling to do it that way. Because everything I do is from a helpful heart. You know, I don't do anything I don't want to do. I listen and I go, yes, that's something that I'm being called to do. No, that is not something I'm being called to do.
And, wow.
That definitely made me a more joyful person in general. So I know a lot of people have suffered during the Great Pause, but I have been incredibly blessed.
May that continue.
Thank you.
Now, the hands of change is eclectic, as you mentioned previously. Even though I stick within the Olympian pantheon, I acknowledge other cultural manifestations of the Olympians, as the ancients did. The ancients, one of the first things they would do is they would equate the Olympians with whatever the local gods are and just assume that they were wearing masks. And,
okay.
That's cool. Made the most clear in the story about when Typhon invaded Olympus and the Olympians had to flee their home. It was said that they went to Egypt and hid behind animal masks. So the gods of Egypt were the same as the Olympians. So that was one of the stories they told about it. But they did that. And the Romans carried on that tradition. And that's why you have like Roman surnames or epithets on the Celtic and Gaulic divinities. So by virtue of their doing this, they're kind of polycultural and eclectic.
Very cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome. We are eclectic. Basically, the membership, whatever the current membership of Hands of Change decides what flavor is at any given time, because people bring their own interests to the group. So Hands of Change is has a permeable hierarchy that we have a core leadership, a body, kind of like a body of elders that is the policy committee for Hands of Change, and then we operate on consensus process or agreement seeking process as the group. So we all make decisions together and we all do rituals together. We take turns doing rituals, and one of the requirements of membership is that you have to do at least one ritual, as you have to write or priest and or priest priestess at a ritual every year. It can be a private one just for the coven, or it can be a public one. And that, I think, helps us to keep having fresh rituals. And although we occasionally redo a ritual that we've done, we have a book of shadows of all of the rituals we've done over the last 26 years. And we also have a disc of shadow. We call it a disc. It's not obviously a disc anymore, but at one point we had all of our rituals on a disc. Now we have it in the cloud, but so that people can, you know, use parts of old rituals, use invocations that have been written before. Most of our members start from scratch and write a ritual based on, you know, what's happening that time of year. It's a very creative process. And that, I think, keeps it fresh, and we have all kinds of different, like we've had members who are interested in Egypt and Babylon and Native American and Indian culture, and, you know, like all, I personally, my current flavor seems to be kind of like New Age Wicca, where I kind of, I have this sort of awakening experience several years ago. I was coming from a meditation group and listening to a Deepak Chopra tape in my, or CD in my car. This is like dating myself. But, you know, back when there were tapes in my car, and I all of a sudden experienced that the car didn't exist, and I was the car, and I was flying, and the road and I were one, and everything was one. And so I started calling that my 15 minutes of awakening, because it lasted something like 15. I don't know exactly how long it lasted, but it was this amazing experience of like flying and seeing the road through the car, and like I just the current and I know I wasn't doing any drugs because people often ask me that. It was just seeing the world as one and seeing our physical reality as a metaphor for actual reality. So since then, although I believe that the energies of the gods exist, I have this sort of heretical idea that humans create the gods with their energy, that we humans are creators just like we think God is a creator, that we're like self-actualized and that we create our reality every moment that we think or speak. So that's part of how, you know, I can say I'm retired and on the salary of God, because I'm continually believing that everything's working out, money's just coming to me like that. And I believe everybody can do that. So that's kind of my current flavor of magic. And I actually gave a talk at Free Spirit Gathering on what I was calling 5D magic, a Wicca for the new age. And I was talking about how Wicca can be there is a path to enlightenment, just a Near Eastern idea.
I wish we had more time tonight, because that's a schedule on another show, because again, it mirrors a lot of things that have been happening to me and realizations I've had as well. I also, in addition to believing that we create our reality, I also believe that we are the gods dreaming. Like, you know, what we call reality is actually the dream of gods. And there's no place to ascend to. We're already ascended. And this is just our dream process. And we can learn from it, or we can get lost in it. It's totally up to us.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree with that idea. That makes complete sense in my worldview.
So we'll have to get you back again very soon. and I had other questions to ask you as well. I wanted to ask about the Pan-Pagan Council, but again, next show. Can you kindly share not only your contact information, but information about Ishtar Fest 2021 again?
Sure, absolutely. So probably the best way to reach me is crow@handsofchange.org. And we have Ishtar Fest @handsofchange.org if people have questions specifically about Ishtar Fest. And if you go to the website there, to www.handsofchange.org/IshtarFest, or to the Ishtar Fest Facebook page, you will find a registration form for the festival. We are still accepting. We do have quite a few presentations already, but we are still accepting presentations that are of the topic of Sumerian or something related to Sumerian culture and religion, because that's what the festival is about. and can be found at those places.
Thank you so very much. Now we have to work on your next being a guest again on the show because, again, you said some things that resonated very profoundly. Thank you so very much, Mara. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm glad we had the opportunity tonight.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
And we're going to close with another song by Virginia Ackley, If You Can Dream. And everyone, check out Ishtar Fest. I'll post the links on the promo for today's show. Thanks again, Amara.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be found by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing yours heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till